Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello, welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. This is your host, Mason Cosby, and today I'm joined by Ryan George, who is the CMO of DocuPace. Ryan, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Mason. Love the energy. Love it.
I try to start off quick because otherwise you just lose people. So that said, here's what we're talking about today, and I'm really excited because we have started to work with so many companies that are multi-product, and they actually have very different ICPs or very different best customers depending on the products in which they're actually trying to sell. And what you have done for DocuPace is actually a really detailed cohort analysis to then best understand the right ways to engage different audiences around different products. And not just the upfront sell, but then also like the lifetime value to expand lifetime value over time. So I'm super excited to do it and learn from you. How do you even approach cohort analysis, get people aligned, and associate the right resourcing? So that said, why did you even do a cohort analysis? Like, lots of people talk about it, but a lot of people never do it. So why did you even start to do this?
Yeah, sure. So we went through a recapitalization process last year, and our new investors, Genstar Capital, it was part of the onboarding process to get a better grip around the clients that we have and sort of the different segments within the business. And so that was a part of that process. It was something that was really interesting to me, given both my background in the industry, the wealth management industry, as well as sort of knowing our clients and sort of getting a good grip around how do we message to each of them. So that, like most good things, it came with as a board request, but also, you know, it's one of those things that gives the level of importance and allowed us to, you know, drive forward and hopefully put together the right analysis.
What I always try to convey to people is PE groups or VC groups typically have really good processes because their whole job is just like grow businesses. So even if you're not backed, or even if you aren't looking at becoming backed with new partners, it's just a good idea. Look at your customers and understand which customers have stayed for the longest, generate the most profit, and actually refer more customers. So are there any details that you could share around like how'd you actually gather that data and who was involved in that conversation to determine the best customer by cohort?
Yeah. So, I mean, I will add to that saying that, you know, PE firms definitely have processes that work. So pay attention because they have good things to say. But also in this case, our business is changing. So what we thought maybe the clients could purchase in the past isn't necessarily what they could be buying in the future. And so as we look to expand our product set and even business units and business lines, it was really important to understand what we had in the cupboard, right? So what do we have that in our current group that was possible to purchase something? So what I started with is, I'll give you an update, is like basically have full enterprise business all the way down to really small retail clients. And so I carved out all the retail clients and sort of put them over here because they're one thing that we can deal with. And at a certain point, I was really focusing on the 150 or so enterprise clients that we have. And I decided, pulled together all the data we have. So the benefit that we have over other different places, different market segments, is we actually have databases that have information on growth, information on employee counts, advisor counts, all sorts of information that, because it's required as a part of regulatory filings that they do on a quarterly basis. So that works in our favor. So it's like, if I have a known database I can pull from, well, then I can put everybody together and start slicing it up. And that's what I did. So what I wanted to do was look at not only the size of the companies, but also, you know, how are they registered? What types of business are they investing in? What is the size of the business? What's their buying power? Are they, you know, or buying habits? And what, you know, how sensitive are they to the price? So there was about 14 different factors that I looked at. And some of them were qualitative, some of them were quantitative. Like, I don't think somebody could have come off the street and done the same thing because I'm, you know, leaning on my experience of working with them for 5 years or so.
It's one of the things, we actually just did a similar thing for our own business and doing a cohort analysis to understand the best customer based on LTV. But we also looked at, we're a services business, so like, what's the ease of delivery? Like, how much are we having to customize an SOP for these kinds of clients? What's the team structure internally? Those are not hard data points, but they're qualitative in nature that have a massive impact on the LTV, because if you work with the wrong kind of team, they're going to churn quickly. So it's looking at all of those things and understand for our customers, These are the quantitative things that, for lack of a word, we could go put into a filtering criteria relatively easily. And here are the quantitative that's filtering criteria, and the qualitative that we need to just know our customers really well. And they may not show up in data points, but they're going to show up in gong calls. They're going to show up just as we do research on the industry in and of itself.
Yeah. So I'll take, for instance, and I'll give you a perfect example. So I came up with 4 basic cohorts. One was the behemoths, which is the largest ones. The second one was our core market. So largest cohort, the people that we know to serve at a pristine level. Then we have scalers, which are the firms that I say are on the up and coming. So like they're the future ones that are in the core market. And then I have limited upside firms. And the reason I call them limited upside is they're good customers of ours. They're paying their bills. They'll be long-term customers in a lot of cases, but the upside growth is relatively muted. And so if you're in that camp, what I was trying to tell our sales team was like, look, like I wouldn't spend a lot of time trying to cross-sell or upsell them this piece because they just don't have the money, right? It's not available in their budget. And it's not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just that you should spend your time in other areas. And so that's one thing that's been really helpful is not only, you know, how do we talk to the different cohorts, but also where do we spend our time and resources trying to expand?
No, I love that. And, you know, we work with a lot of clients on their customer expansion ABM programs, and they do try to expand every customer. And what we've actually seen is if you try to expand customers that truly have no budget, they don't feel like you want them to be successful today. They're just like, oh, you just want more and more of my money. And we've actually seen some sales or CS teams become so aggressive with that, that it's created client churn issues. So I actually love the breakdown of these are good, but like, they're probably going to stay here.
Yeah. Well, what's even funny is you think, oh, our largest clients are the ones that have the capacity to buy more. In some ways, yes. But what we've seen with our largest clients is they are best of breed buyers, but they generally want a premium price for their size, right? So like they want what's leader in the market, but they're going to want that as a discount because I'm the behemoth. I'm the one in the room that's going to be able to drive that. And I think that's something that we've adjusted to as well. One of the things that also was, an offshoot or an added benefit is it's also given us a good ability to go expand in where do we target like our SDR services. So if I know this group of scalers, what their profile is and what they look like, I can then go scrub the TAM and see, okay, these are direct matches here, SDR team, you go focus on them. And that's been opening up tons and tons of doors for us.
So I think most people generally in theory, when you outline these kinds of concepts, are like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But it typically breaks down at the execution stage and actually getting people aligned and saying like, don't outbound to those people. So I'm curious, like, how did you actually get people aligned on then how to engage different audiences based on the cohort analysis?
Yeah. So I think that human behavior habits, hardest part of this whole process, right? Because especially if you make it easy, like I laugh sometimes, I read like business help books or guidebooks and it's like, oh, that's just sounds simple. It's like, yes, sounds simple. The truth is in the execution, right? So can you actually do these things, right? So a diet isn't hard, but executing on a diet is hard, right? Like when you're hungry and it's late at night and you're tired, like that's the hard part. And so I think I first started with internally. So working with our relationship managers and getting them to understand, okay, this is how we look, how we're looking at these clients. So they could sort of categorize them themselves. With the sales team, you know, I have the luxury of working with our marketing and sales team work really close together. Like we don't have, you know, sometimes there's tension there. We don't have that tension that exists in other areas. And I think showing them the easiest way has been showing them the opportunity that it creates, right? So like, if I can make you smarter in a room, most people are going to take me up on that, right? If I can help you take a 8-month close timeline to a 6-month close timeline, like they're going to get paid 2 months faster. They like that. And so that's been part of it. I will say it takes multiple efforts. You're not going to change the sort of language that you use internally just in the marketing group or within sales group with one presentation. Like it's going to take multiple presentations and you're going to have to draw back into it and work through that over time. And I think slowly things start to get built up. Now we've built out like revenue forecasts based on which cohort, where our revenue was coming from. Like when we look at acquisitions of other companies, we look at the client base and I put them in cohorts so we can better understand, okay, this is what the clients look like. And so getting that, making that sort of quick heuristic of, oh, this is what these firms are, has been really valuable for us overall.
One of the things I want to dig into, and we did a webinar earlier today on attribution and alignment, and we talked a lot around compensation. So I'm just curious, as you think through aligning incentives, one of the things that we just keep coming back to when we try to get sales teams bought in on like an ABM program, is we're like, well, I'm literally not incentivized to. Like I make less money if marketing gets credit for the deal sourcing. So I'm curious, as you think about how do we align incentives, does compensation play a role in driving that kind of human behavior?
So it hasn't with us. I can see where it does. So our compensation structures are like, we go for like the overall win, right? So I would say, I don't want to say we care less, but we pay less attention to the direct source of where a lead comes from, because it can be all of the above, right? I saw them at an event 3 years ago. They clicked on an ad and downloaded a white paper a year ago. Now we've been calling them and outbound to them, but they haven't responded, but now they do an inbound. Does marketing get that lead? Does somebody else get that lead? Like, it's really hard.
Yeah.
So taking an everybody wins standpoint, the sales group will get compensated when the deal is closed. Marketing group, we get compensated based on our overall volumes and quality of leads and things like that. So they're less tied to specific deals or where they come from. Now, as a CMO, I try to pay attention to that as best as I can, because I got to know where to spend our money and double down on things. But I do think with attribution, you probably more of an expert than I am. It's sometimes if you hold on to it too closely, you're could be diminishing what your returns may be.
No, I mean, the general consensus between a VP of marketing, a RevOps leader, and a salesperson is that the right approach to actually drive alignment is focused on compensation for closing the deal, not the sourcing.
Yeah.
But you should track it just to know where you, right, exactly what you said, invest your dollars appropriately. But we want to win as a team.
I think too, like, sales is hard. They're the ones actually getting in front of somebody asking for a check. That work is getting to close the deal and getting and following up 20 times to get the contract through. So like, I like the fact that they're compensated at that point. Like, they deserve the credit. They deserve the reward, just because my job, you know, all I'm doing is on the street, ringing them in the door. Like, the whole experience after that is not something that I have my hands in. So I know the difficulties of that.
Yeah. So last couple of quick questions would just be, as you think through operationalizing this, what are some of the things that you have done across the different teams to ensure that people are actually engaging at the right times with your different cohorts?
Yeah. So one of the things we've done is building it into our CRM. We haven't completed that, but we're doing a CRM overhaul and sort of how do we put these in buckets. We're revisiting it quarterly to see if somebody's moved, but also really staying together in terms of, we've been working on a cross-sell strategy across multiple departments. So across relationship management, marketing, sales, even delivery. And I think that has helped, because it's like, we can put it in the bucket. It's also helped us, like, we're from an ABM like campaign standpoint, like, have a whole engagement campaign going to this specific cohort with this messages and this product, because it's best fit for this group, whereas the other group, it may be best fit for something else. It also helps with like sizing. So if we look at a revenue forecast, I can say, oh, well, we have 10 scalers and they're generally about average, the mean like ARR is X. And well, so that's to give us a forecast for what we'll likely look like at the end of the year. And so there's just a lot of ways that it sort of helped give us a cipher for a very sort of nebulous market.
One other thing that you mentioned before we recorded is just, you've also been able to use your cohort analysis to inform a lot of M&A activity. Could you unpack that a little bit for some of the executives that might be listening?
Yeah, because I think you want to, when you're buying a business, you're not buying the business as it exists today. You're buying what embedded potential it has for two things. One, to grow, like organically, or sell into your existing business, right? And so having that, this sort of overlay on looking at the potential targets client base gives us a better idea of how the behaviors may happen. Like, I have enough data set to know, oh, these are going to take 12 months to come through. So we can forecast for that. Or we can say, oh, you know what? These clients look a lot like our clients. So I know how to sell to that client. We know how to message that client. And so that has been helpful to get us really size the opportunity, not necessarily from down to the very dollar, but, oh, we think we can do this or not. On the other hand, if it's a completely odd lot fit, it doesn't match what we have. You know, you have the opposite approach, which is maybe this doesn't make sense for us.
Yeah. I think we often talk about like the reporting side or cohort analysis or all these data analytics approaches as like what is now possible. And I've actually found, just as we've been growing scrappy over here, it's even more helpful to just know where to say no. Because like, we're a bootstrap business and most of our clients are in that $20 to $100 million range. They maybe get two or three big swings a year as like an organization.
Yeah.
So you got to figure out what you're saying yes to. Otherwise, one of the phrases that's just been really deeply internalized for me in the past year is businesses die because of half-built bridges. Oh. So if you just keep saying yes to a couple of things, but you never finish anything, you just you end up having all these starts, but nothing finished.
This goes back to execution and what I was mentioning before, which is like saying no to, especially if it's a client, a valuable client, it's really hard to say no to them. But we try to not say no, we say not now, and here's why. And that, yeah. Try to stay focused. We're not perfect. We'll get off track just like anybody else. But I do think, like, for instance, I could spend money and paid for a scaler type cohort because I know they're quick to make a decision. There's a relatively large amount of them. I have a really good idea of who they are and what they're wanting. With the bigger shops, it's less so because it's less, you know, like anything else, it's hard to grab the big whale. And so I do a lot more direct contact, you know, one-to-one sales versus trying to do digital ads. I'm not going to get a seven-figure contract on a digital ad. That's just not where it's going to be. Maybe awareness, you know, but it's just if I put all my dollars there, I don't know how successful I would be.
Yeah, it's looking at cohort analysis also to the lens of the buyer behavior. Say, scalar, quick decision. We can maybe do more direct response through paid media. Behemoth, we're still gonna run ads, but we have a different expectation of the results of those ads to be account relationship expansion and awareness versus conversion.
Right, exactly. And also, it looks like we can do best fit products. So for cross selling, we can know, oh, well, this group has this need that we have, and we can target them versus trying to target the wrong people.
Yeah, I love it. Last two quick questions, because again, multi-product suite. So a large part of what you guys are offering is not just the upfront sale, but the expansion component. Have you guys mapped out specific product journeys for your different customers based on the different cohorts to where you're like, we know when they hit this point, they're going to need this product. Like, how are you actually thinking through systematizing that cross sell?
So we haven't yet, but that's something that's in work today. We have a new chief customer officer who's brought us a bunch of new ideas and a bunch of sort of fresh perspective. And so that work is in front of us and work that we're looking to do actually right now, which I think will help. I mean, it's some science, some art, but I do think having just a better idea of where the clients can go. And also, it helps, you know, if you can provide as a relationship manager, if you can provide a client, here's what a 3-year playbook working with us looks like. And, you know, that sort of standpoint. I think in addition to that, one thing that has been helpful is using our own client base for market research in terms of what products they are looking for, what products that they have and aren't working for them that they may need. And what that does is sort of take the direct service and support relationship and puts it to the side, and it lets them have a conversation that's tied to ideation and like dreaming a little bit. And I think that's actually been helpful in like seeing us as partners.
Yeah. Once you're a little bit further down the road on that mapping customer expansion side, because there are whole ABM programs just dedicated to that. So
One of the things that's happening, probably happening in other areas, I'm sure it is, there's a lot of consolidation in the wealth management industry, a lot of M&A activity. And so a firm that may be in one core today could merge with the two or three other ones and easily flip into the next business. And so being ready for that and being ready when the shooting starts, that's a bad metaphor, but you know, you got to be ready to go.
Yeah. Oh, trust me. There's a ton of M&A activity right now in the agency space, and it's starting to get interesting.
Yeah. What is it called? Economies of scale. Today, right? If you don't have economies of scale, you're sort of up a creek.
Yeah. Well, Ryan, just last quick question for you. If somebody's thinking about building ABM for the very first time, like what is one piece of advice that you'd offer them that you wish you'd done before you built your first program?
I think one thing would be like, don't worry about getting it 100% right. Start with 25%. If you can map out like one ICP that looks just like maybe 20% of your customers, like start there and then you can build around it. But once you have the anchor point, everything becomes much easier because you sort of have one group that it becomes a relative point that you can build below it and you can build above it and right and left.
I love that. That's one of the things we tell all of our clients is, you know, right now your big problem is you don't have an ABM program. It's like, we're going to build one and you're going to get 10 new problems, but the problems are going to be things like, we don't have enough data at the awareness level stage, which feeds the rest of the program, or the activation point for sales is a little clunky, but you don't get to solve those problems until you have a program that's actually running. So like just start, get 25, 50% right, and just know it's an iterative process. I love that.
Yeah, you're totally right.
Ryan, thanks so much for joining me today. If you want to find out more about you, where would you point them?
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn, Ryan George, or our website is DocuPace. We have lots of cool information, a lot of new things, new content pieces that we're pushing out there on a daily and weekly basis.
I love it. Well, again, Ryan, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been Scrappy ABM. We'll see you guys in the next one.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.